When you feel overwhelmed by the many artists posting on social media and wonder if you will ever measure up, stop and remind yourself that you are unique and there's no one like you. In this episode, we address the topic, comparing yourself to others. Welcome to Art Ladders, The Creative Climb with Valerie Allen and Armin Merzman. This podcast is focused on interviews, features, and stories about art. It's for artists and art lovers. I'm Val. I'm the abstract artist in the group, joined by Armin, the realist. Hello, and welcome to episode 56 of Art Ladders. Today, we are going to have a subject of comparing yourself to other artists. It's something that Armin and I have talked a lot about during our art discussions that we have on Saturdays, where we sit around and drink coffee around our little kitchen table. And we thought this was a pretty relevant topic right now as we enter busy exhibition seasons and such. So this is the episodes that Armin and I do conversations together, and it's some of our favorite ways to introduce messages to all of you folks. So I hope you enjoy this. And I have Armin right here with me. Hi, Armin.
Hello, how's it going?
Going great. We just had breakfast, which was delicious.
And I'm getting ready to do some teaching today, some classes.
That's right. That's right.
So, we're doing this is an interesting podcast about comparing yourself to other people and the good, the bad, and all of that comes along with that.
Right. We've had a really, really busy summer. I know on Facebook, people are asking me, whoa, what happened? What are you up to? Are you able to create art this summer? It's been so busy. Let's talk about a few of the things before we get into the meat of the episode of what we've been up to all summer. It flew by.
Right. Well, you know, first I had major back surgery, and, you know, that took a big chunk, not only out of making my art, but just doing things to get ready for my classes. But I think I've got that. I'm feeling well now. I'm able to draw again. And I've been working on my fall Zoom classes, which is the iPhonography class and the Art Talk class, which actually starts today, and the intermediate drawing class. And then I'm teaching a live class at Studio 23 in Bay City. You know, when we talk about these kinds of things, they don't just happen, you know. It takes a lot of planning and getting the visuals out, and try not to repeat your visuals and all those kinds of things. So, Val and I are having a show called Overview in Grand Rapids.
Well, not necessarily Grand Rapids, about 20 minutes south of Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
Van Singel Fine Arts Center.
And that's in...
Byron Center, Michigan.
Right. So to get ready for that kind of show, if those of you are thinking about having a solo show, start working 2 months before, because in our case, a lot of times we show these things on social media, but you know, that's now you have to frame them. You have to get glass for them. You have to cut mats for them if you do it yourself. And, Val and I are both framers, but because of my back, Val had to do all of the framing for me. So I think I'll get another back surgery next year for sure.
It was pretty handy for you. Luckily, I love framing. I'm a maker. I consider myself an artist who is a maker, and making the frames and cutting the mats, putting the glass on is almost like a reward for me to see a finished product. It's a whole separate issue. You know, and you mentioned your classes. I'm just curious. I'm going to ask a few questions here about that. Can people join your class after it is started? How would they do that if they missed, let's say they missed the first session?
I think at that point, you can't sign up with Eventbrite.
Right.
But if somebody really wants to go into class, they could email me.
Yes, perfect.
And you know, if there's room, I can take a check from those people.
Or that's
Venmo,
right.
Or Venmo.
Or Venmo. Yes, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. And you also have a Mastrious mentorship group going.
That's right.
That meets monthly. Now that one is a rolling registration, isn't it?
Yes, anybody can sign into that. It's not a class like a normal drawing class would be. It's a mentorship. So if somebody's in there and they want to learn how to draw better or want to get some techniques out or some ideas out, sure, they can get that too. But as a mentorship, we talk about how to get into shows and all these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. That people have questions of. So check that out at Mastrious.
Yeah, I actually have one that's starting fresh on Sunday, October 8th. It'll be a Sunday class, which I like. I've always considered Sunday to be my studio Sunday. So we
will. Since when was that?
No, I do that all the time. That's why I disappear on Sundays. I'm kind of my studio.
I didn't notice you were gone.
Yeah, right. You're up in your studio. But no, it's going to start on October 8th. And it's the second Sunday of every month from Eastern time. I'm going to give you Eastern is 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So that one is up and ready for registration. I had a little info session with some folks the other day that went really well with some interesting questions for them. For example, will the sessions be recorded if I can't make it on a Sunday? Absolutely. They will be recorded. We will have, may I ask private questions to you? Yes, we have a full-blown chat capability through the Mastrious.com. Website. This Canadian art company that we've talked about in the past. We've even interviewed the founders. Mm-hmm. Check back in our episode library.
Yes, check that out, Mastrious.com. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible organization of mentors from around the world.
Yes. So I am so excited. And think about that. Slot that in for Sundays. You're getting ready for another huge show in December. Tell us about that.
Yes, this is a show that I'm the curator of. It's going to be at Buckham Gallery in Flint, Michigan. And Robert Sheffman is going to be in that.
Yes.
Fritz Hondenwanger is in
that. Hondenwanger.
Mm-hmm. Todd Burrows is in that. And myself. And
great.
It's called Four Realists, Four Voices.
Yeah.
And what it really concentrates on, and in my experience as a realist, these are the people that I've associated with who I have seen grow immensely popular nationally, even. So I'm honored to be among them. Well, I'm curating, so I'm making myself among them, you know. So,
that's the right of the curator.
Yeah, but I do believe I belong there.
But you know what? You put in a lot of work under that role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for all of you curators and artists and nonprofits that work together, you know what I'm talking about. You know about herding everyone together.
Oh, curating. Yes. You're making art out of a show or into a show.
Right.
Not only by getting these people on board and arranging transportation and
the shipping. Yes.
And we've known about this for more than a year now. So we've been working on a piece just for that show. And I think others are too. Mm-hmm. And the closer we get to it, the more information I'll bring out.
That's right. Some specific dates and things. And we've also been traveling and doing other types of things. Both Armin and I give presentations to groups. We do programs for groups. You know, we'll come in with our PowerPoint. And I just finished one at the Brighton Art Guild. It was wonderful. And that is something separate from my Golden Paints lectures. This is a topic where I'm talking about me. I'm talking about my artwork. It's all about me on these presentations. But seriously, I give a lot of info to artists about their careers and the career path I took. So they're informative and they seem to enjoy it. So there's that opportunity out there. I'm telling you all, if you know of a nonprofits out there that would like some programs like that, we're both ready and willing to do.
We both jury shows as
we
well.
We both jury shows. We've been doing quite a bit of that. And what I like, in fact, the jurying of shows kind of brought about the topic of this conversation.
Before we get into that conversation, tell us about your show that you're having right now.
Oh, yes.
Creative 360.
Yeah, Creative 360 is an arts in both visual and performing arts center in Midland, Michigan. So right in the middle of the Michigan. And I'm having a three-person show there with Todd Burrows, who's the director of the Atelier School of Art in Detroit, and Tim Ricketts, who is affiliated with Midland Center for the Arts and also a wonderful potter who has a studio on his farm and does beautiful firings, raku, and there's another one, I want to say salt fire situation out there on the farm. I'm not a ceramicist, but I know there are two special outdoor events that he handles out there. And so the three of us were invited about 8 months ago to participate in this show. It is called Honoring the Process, because all three of us are firm believers in the sacred nature of art, the way art can heal, the way art can inform, communicate different social practice messages, all of that. So,
well, it is an amazing show. All three of you just, stood up and brought your best work in there. And it's beautiful to see, and it's beautifully hung.
Yes. We brought our newest work in that I'm excited about. And also, Creative 360 has a brand new location.
And this is their first show.
And we were their first show. So that was a huge honor as well. So let's see. So we've got the travel going on. We've got the producing of art going on. And basically, June, July, and August just slid away.
Yeah. I mean, time passes fast anyway, but it seemed to have been a little more intense.
It was very intense.
The major part of this that I got done is clean my studio.
You cleaned it. I even visited your studio.
Yes, you did. I mean, after
it was right outside our house, but I was avoiding it.
Right. And so after a year of trying to get out there and do it, I finally did a little bit every day.
It looks really nice.
You go back to art on that. Do a little bit every day.
Do a little bit every day.
So I finally got it all set, and hopefully I'll keep it clean. What happens with me as an artist, I do keep it clean till about the last week. And then I just start throwing stuff all over the place. I drop my pencil. I won't pick it up. I'll get another one instead.
Time becomes swift. So, yeah. So comparing ourselves to other artists, and I've done it. You've done it.
Well, I think that's part of the learning process, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
When you're a kid and you first see art, obviously, Val and I didn't have the internet, so we actually went to museums and went to the library my first real influence was my father, watching him paint and draw. And I compared myself to him, which at the time I thought was ridiculous and impossible to be there. I think sometimes when you compare yourself to it can be enlightening, or it can be a big downer, like I'm never going to get there.
Right. And you're right. The comparisons I would make were usually when I would go to a large library, check out a bunch of art books. And so I'm looking at the masters and the impressionists and the post-impressionists and mimicking their style, really. That was my extent of comparison at that point.
Well, that isn't a tradition of teaching.
It is a tradition.
We talked a little bit about Todd and the Atelier, and the system of that is you follow your instructor.
Right.
And paint or draw what they do. Now, it's changed today. That Atelier is not quite like that. But yes, we had to go to libraries. What about now?
Right.
We can see art of any kind.
Right.
At any time.
In any instant.
Do you think that's a positive?
I think it's a paradox. I think it can be good and bad. Now, at the show that I just juried, there was one painting that was addressed on that theme of social media, you know. It was basically a graffiti piece, very interesting. And I spoke with the young gentleman who created it, and he had a statement that went along with it. And it was all about the likes, the little hearts that pop up. It's all about the loves, the different categories of like versus love on these social media posts, and how you can get caught up in that, and how that really pushes you toward comparing yourself to others. You start counting your likes. You start counting your loves on your posts. You social media people out there know what I'm talking about. And he addressed that head on. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of when I was giving my talk and, you know, congratulating the winners, I mentioned that, you know, we are pretty much everyone in there is an adult. We didn't have a lot of teenagers, but can you imagine being a 15, 16 year old? And all of a sudden, instead of comparing yourself to the books that you're reading or your teachers that you're studying with, you're comparing yourself to every other teenager out there, how hard that would be. And I feel it's just as hard for adults to face that as well. You can easily get caught up in it, you know.
Well, you know, there is a difference between being influenced and taking the energy of the piece or the soul of the piece and something like that, and say, I want my work to feel that way.
Uh-huh. Right.
And I think
that's a positive.
That's a positive comparison. If you're you work tight or loose and you see somebody that does the opposite, you could say, okay, I'm going to start painting looser. Uh-huh. But that's a big shift by looking at one piece of art.
Right.
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 And you already have an internal language. Mm-hmm. Those of you who know my work, I spend a lot of time on it. Uh-huh. And I like the intricacy and the observational skills that bring me to that. So I enjoy that world. But sometimes I'll see a piece that's very sketchy and all of a sudden I want to go there, but it's not natural mm-hmm. for me.
Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I have had heated discussions, maybe
more no,
heated
oh, not us.
About our differences in our styles. And I don't know if I want to go there right now, but what the heck? I just the other day, you know, you mentioned, oh, I'm an abstractionist at heart. And I hear that, and I'm being honest. I hear that and I go, what do you mean your abstractionist is hard? I mean, I get it. I get that you really, I know you really, really enjoy abstraction. You enjoy my work in particular. I get that 100%. Mm-hmm. But when I hear that, folks, I'm like, well, if you're an abstractionist at heart, why is your work so realistic? Mm-hmm. Why are you up there? Which I admire 100%. I'm a seat of the pants artist right here looking at
it. So what you're saying is I'm a bullshitter at heart.
No.
I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
I'm saying you want it all. You want it all. That's what I'm saying.
I am moved by abstraction more as a viewer than I'm moved by realism. Then,
yeah.
Not all of it. I'll see a realistic piece that just, wow.
Right. You know? Right.
But I've always been moved by abstraction, and I dabbled in it in my 20s and found out that it wasn't very natural for me to paint that way. You know, I was being influenced too much by the abstract expressionists, mm-hmm. Tobies and Motherwell mm-hmm. and all these people. But mine looked very structured, very dead. There was no life in it. And so when I say I'm an abstractionist at heart is I look at that and I get the most pleasure out of abstraction mm-hmm. as an artist. Don't get me wrong. Again, you know, I'm a realist. And when I say the abstract part of it is seeing the abstract design in nature mm-hmm. and drawing things that aren't necessarily pretty or any of that kind of stuff. But, you know, paying homage to the natural design of what I'm looking at, mm-hmm. even though that might not, it might just be a wall that I'm drawing.
Right.
So the simplification isn't, I draw that simply, but it's more about the space I use as an artist.
Yes.
And with my iPhonography, I've been dabbling more and more with layers and cutting layers and using other layers to create this abstract kind of feel. And that has brought a lot of satisfaction to me as a realist, because right now I'm working on a drawing. I've already have 800 hours on this drawing. I mean, mm-hmm. and you get out there and you're drawing on it, you know, and you're, okay, I'm 68. I got four more of these to draw or something like that. Mm-hmm. I want to be a creative person all the time. Mm-hmm. And so iPhonography has given me that amazing thing. Those of you who don't know what iPhonography is, just taking photos with an iPhone, but you don't use AI. You use a technique called app stacking, mm-hmm. where you're creating all the images from bits and pieces of images you've taken before. Mm-hmm. And that can become a very abstract kind of way. I'm an abstractionist at heart. I think maybe I mean that I get moved by abstraction mm-hmm. more than realism.
That's right. And I, on the opposite side of that, I'm inserting some realism into my work right now.
Are you a realist at heart?
I'm a realist at heart. Here's what I'm doing with that realism in my art. I really like the idea of having a little bit of realism to draw an audience into the piece. And once they're into the piece from across the room, they see something they may recognize. I'm working a lot, not right now, with vintage farm equipment, vintage lawn furniture, kind of a retro feel. Once they're in, then they see the layers and the scratches and the human touch that is the abstraction part of it. And I'm really enjoying that part.
How do you compare yourself with people that work like that? Things that you see, you have a lot of friends from that are abstractionists.
Right.
And when you see something that blows you away, what do you think?
Yeah, when I see something, you know, say on Pinterest or Instagram, I follow both of those pretty closely, Facebook as well. What draws me in to a total abstraction, and it's hard to photograph, would be the depth of the texture, mm-hmm. the grittiness of the texture and the actual mark making that basically carves through those layers. Again, hard to see on a little screen for sure.
On a side note of that, when you were having your opening last week, a lot of people came to me and said, these look so much different in person.
Oh, yeah, we did have that, didn't we?
Right. And because the scale of them and the texture of them, you don't see it. Everybody's work now is, you know, 5 by 6 inches or something.
Yeah, like that on there. 4 by 4 inches.
Yeah. And so you don't see it like you do in life.
No.
You see a lot more art, but you actually see less art.
Yeah. And the thing is, with viewing art on Instagram, you see basically a flatter image. It's hard to pick up texture because the shadows of the texture usually are not, unless it's a super, super photograph. And so it's not a true story. So you're comparing yourself to others and it's not a true depiction. You know, I have the retro chairs, the Talk to Me series, which are very small. They're 9 by 12 inches. And I had another artist say to me, she thought they were going to be huge, but she said, I was pleasantly surprised when they were smaller and more intimate and they read well as a grouping. Mm-hmm. It's all about people getting together and just talking, just like we're doing right now.
Right.
So you don't get the true apples to apples. And so you start comparing yourself and making bad planning.
Right.
You know, it's bad planning for an artist.
Well, I want to plug a friend of mine, Dennis Peterson's.
Yes.
And he's a world world known realist. I mean, he's part of the group that started hyperrealism. And I was in a show with him and we spent some time, had dinner and all these kinds of things. What surprised me about his work was when you see the work in person, you see tiny little brushstrokes.
Yes.
And tiny little patterns.
Yeah.
Erwin Lewandowski, who was a draughtsman,
yes,
is the same way.
Yes. They look so shocked.
They're very realistic. When you come close to it, you find yourself dancing with the marks.
Dancing with the mark making.
Yeah. And there's a lot of art now where people don't realize there should be texture, that has texture. Mm-hmm. So when you compare yourself to other people and say, wow, that looks like a photograph, for me, that's, I'm not going to get into what that means. I try to make things not look like a photograph, but anyway.
Right, no.
It's those little textures that take it from one thing when you look at it 8 feet away,
right,
to this beautiful symphony of mark making, mm-hmm, that appears a bit away to be very realistic.
Yeah, right, that's right.
And Dennis Peterson is, and Erwin both are.
Erwin Lewandowski, yeah, both. Mm-hmm. You get that feeling, mm-hmm, when you get up close to it. Mm-hmm. So there, nothing beats seeing the artwork in person, mm-hmm, nothing. So even though we feel like we're traveling when we're on our computers, and we're connecting with artists from all over the world on Instagram, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing, it does not meet the expectation of seeing it in person. So the more we artists, and I did this, take yourselves on artist dates, and preferably alone.
I don't know where this is going.
And this is part of the Artist Way, written by Julia Cameron, that monthly you should take yourself on an artist date. It may have even been weekly. I can barely squeeze a month in, but you go by yourself to view art or something. Maybe you visit a glass facility such as the Botanical Gardens down in Toledo, where all the glass blowers are, Flint Institute of Art. Maybe you go to a cooking class. I don't know. Take yourself on some dates and open yourself up to real life experiences. Not only will you, it takes a little bit about that comparison away because you're all on equal playing field at that point, but you meet people and you talk to people and then connect with them on Instagram. You get a much better feel of what they're all about instead of romanticizing in your head the quality of the work coming across of these flat images. And by the way, the flat images that photograph the best would have basically no iridescent colors, no interference colors in them. They're very high contrast, just like a very wonderful photograph would be. And the texture doesn't show.
Yeah.
So you have to keep that in mind.
Well, when you if you're a realist and you compare yourself to other realists, you'll see a lot of things that, I have to be honest, kind of turn me off. When you see them taking a photo from some star and then putting their drawing next to it, and you know, they're trying, so you, one looks just like the other, you can't tell them apart. That's not making art, right? That's copying art. And I have to say, I did the same thing as a young person.
Are you getting the full picture? Is this a student starting out, or is this someone who is making a career out of this? Which I know they're out there.
Well, I have to say this though, that they're losing the point, the creative process, and the design. The same thing is done by AI. So. Yeah, there's some things, you know, where you're losing that concept part of making art and the design of making, mm-hmm, art. So I'm not influenced by that stuff at all. What I'm influenced by when I look at drawing, realistic drawing, is, wow, they captured something I've never really seen captured.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that doesn't make me want to run out and draw like them.
Right.
But it gives me an idea, you know, that person has drawn a single flower on paper, no background.
Yes.
And then I like that, you know, the free space of that, the negative space for then concentrating on one little image. And I might take that farther. That's how I look at art and I'm influenced by that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've known artists that they're very visual for one thing. And I'm kind of one of them. I'm kind of the artist that likes to flip through a magazine and see lots of images, or flip through Instagram and see lots of images. I do it very fast. I don't study it. If I'm lucky, I may read a tidbit about the artist, but I'm just letting this imagery kind of subconsciously get into my head so that I have resource later when I go to the studio. Not so much to be derivative, that I don't want to be, but I want to have a background of mark making and ideas swirling around in my head.
You take many different influences and they become together.
Yes. All of a sudden you're translating them into your, into your own language.
Right.
So I think that's a good part of comparing.
Yeah. I mean, heard somebody say the only original art was done in a cave in France.
Yeah. Well,
everything else is derivative from that, right?
So. It's hard not to be influenced.
Do you ever get depressed when you see something, say, oh my God.
Well, here's what I do. I romanticize it. I exaggerate it. You know, I look at, well, let's say my mentor and hero that I've never met in person, Robert Rauschenberg, who I would basically stalk his studio on Captiva Island whenever I would go to Florida, hoping to catch him coming out of the grocery store or something. I don't even know what I would say to him, but just his whole outlook on life and art and movement and imagery. Oh, just in collaboration, very much a community minded artist, has seeped into me.
Right.
And I'm sure I've romanticized it. I'm sure I know he had struggles going through, you know, the New York time period and in his personal life. And he's human, just like us. Mm-hmm. But I tend to take these people and basically think they can do no wrong. So in that case, I need to read the biography and study and take to heart his quotes, because it's not all the highlights on an Instagram reel. It's just not. We are only seeing the good parts, and I do it too. An artist on Instagram, for the most part, it's our best work. And if it isn't our best work, it's our process work, so that we show people, oh, we're really working. We're really busy, you know, and we are busy, but how do you feel about that? The content we give to our Instagram feed.
Well, I think that's a good thing. I mean, you know, we're not only trying to put artwork and let the artwork explain itself. Now we're talking a little bit about the process, and people want to know that. But going back to Rauschenberg, I don't have a visual artist that has influenced me to that kind of point. The closest I would say would be Andrew Wyeth.
Okay.
Because of the emptiness, the lack of, you know, space, his design, beautiful painter, draftsman. But I don't, as you know, I mean, you don't see that influence in me. I'm much more influenced by the feeling of music. And I listen to a lot of music, and I tried it even as a kid. The Beatles came out. Well, for a while, I wanted to be the fifth Beatle. It was playing guitar on the broom and all this stuff. And I thought, well, it probably won't never happen. But what the music of the Beatles and then many, many artists after that gave me is the feel. And I wanted to bring that feel to life with visual art. Mm-hmm. So that was my influences.
You know,
not that I don't like a lot of artists out there.
Right.
If I see something really good, I just get rid of it. It's just bothers me.
You know, and in my notes for this particular episode, I wrote down, look at other mediums other than the medium that you work in. That's exactly what you just described.
Right.
You looked at music and are you're influenced by music. So it's a healthier comparison, really. You know, I look at Twyla Tharp, a dancer, for organizational skills and for just go-getiveness and energy. She's a dancer. That's a good comparison.
Well, that's a good point, too. When you, if you're on Pinterest, which I am, and I have lots of folders of different things.
Yeah.
I have art that influences me. I have about 3,000 images in that. It's all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, but I would suggest if you're a loose watercolorist, don't just look at loose watercolor. You know, look at things that are the opposite of that. And what is it about that you like or don't like and all those kinds of things. We go back to this, my love of abstraction. I have a big folder in abstraction for the spacing, for the design of it all, you know. Or maybe something that influences just my soul. It has nothing to do with me changing as an artist. Mm-hmm. I just love this piece.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And I'm not influenced as in going there or anything like that. It's just, wow, this feels amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And that I want to bring across to people anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I guess, you know, it's all, how do I say this? I would hate to think that a person wouldn't take a dive into art just because they're looking at social media posts thinking, oh, I could never do that, or I will never be as good as that person. So why even go there? Why even try? I would hate to think that that is happening. Mm-hmm. I've heard that said from people, though. You know, oh, I could never do that. Or, and I just want to call, and in my art making and the way I present to artist groups and the way I jury artist groups, I'm all about the non-competitive spirit between artists. I know Mastrius is big into that. Julie was talking about it on the episode, Julie DeBoer. I love that non-competitive. And so non-competitive means you are not necessarily comparing yourself to others. You're looking at them basically for influence or inspiration, but knowing that you are unique and your voice needs to be heard. And if you're a beginner, go for it. Some of the freshest, most beautiful art is from the beginners. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah. And you go back to children's art too.
Yes.
Things like that, where they're not worried about perspective or, you know, design itself.
Yes.
They have it within themselves. So as art being competitive, I see both things, you know. I've gotten into shows and when I was so thrilled to get into that show and then I didn't get a prize and I'm bummed out.
That's different level.
Or I get in a show and I win second prize. Oh, I'm really,
I really wanted to get first.
Why didn't I get first prize? You know,
it's so different.
I mean, it, you know, we're human beings, you know.
Yes, we are.
Art shouldn't be competitive, but there is a streak of that.
There definitely. And yes, getting into a show that's an award right there. Okay.
It is.
But then not getting into the show, I feel, is an award to yourself. You've been responsible to yourself, pat yourself. I mean, really bolster yourself. I took the courage. I took the leap. I entered the show. I didn't get in. That's one person's idea. The next day that juror would probably pick something completely different. I mean,
we're older and wiser.
Yeah.
When I was in my 20s, I wouldn't get in a show. I would be depressed for 3 days, you know?
Oh, yeah. And then I would go to the show and compare the work that's in the show. And I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Well, how did this thing get in?
This all sucks.
This isn't a very good show. So there we are comparing ourselves.
So when I don't get into a show now, I actually say, oh, I'm glad I don't have to ship that work. I'm relieved in a certain
way. I'll ship it. I'll take it for you anytime you want.
Yeah, you like to travel.
I'm a car person.
You're a traveler. I'm like,
I jump in my car and I listen to podcasts and I'm happy as a lark. I am happy driving.
Well, even when we drive together, you drive.
I'm the driver.
I don't like to drive. You don't like the way I drive.
That's true. I'm a control freak.
And I've never had a ticket in my life. I don't know why. But anyway, I'm fine with it.
You're not going to change that.
I just cruise Pinterest on my phone and stuff like that. So
Oh my gosh. I'm looking over here at all my notes and making sure we covered everything here. So the important part, going back to technology, is, and you brought it up in the very first few minutes, how we grew up in an age where we're looking at books, we're going to museums and galleries and seeing the work in person. Technology has changed all that now. Mm-hmm. It's just so easy to sit here and have the entire art world come to us. I don't know how many newsletters I get in my email feed from, oh my gosh, hyperallergic, you know, artsy, all of them. Saatchi, I read them all. I look at all of them and I feel like, oh, you know, I did my due diligence. I know what's happening out in the art world. But no, well, I really don't.
What would happen if you're looking to be inspired by art and all of a sudden there's a cute thing of a dog?
Right. I do like those too.
Right. And then you fall into this deep tunnel of looking at dog pictures.
One. Oh, are you looking at me?
No, I'm looking at Jasper. Yes, I'm looking at you.
And there's that.
There's
the
that.
Distraction of all of this. Mm-hmm. You know, when's enough enough? When is enough to be influenced and inspired and not sitting there compulsively looking at all of this? I remember an early on conversation with my studio mate. We owned a gallery together, and we were at that point, no technology, of course, but we were looking at Art Forum and Art in America. And we had stacks of them. And we would sit there and flip through them. Finally, I kind of mentioned, you know what? Why don't we just make our own art and quit looking at all this stuff?
That happens today with the internet and this constant feed of different things.
Yeah.
And
then, just make our own art.
I mean, sometimes you got to pull up the computer and just go out and just do, and you know, you get this inspiration from people and you don't even know
it. You don't. Environment will influence you. People, a phrase, a title of a song. I want to touch on, do you feel you have any, a button that somebody can push that can just kind of turn a negative feeling on in you as far as comparing many buttons like that? Something that triggers you to all of a sudden feel insecure with yourself, that another, could be another artist, could be an instructor, could be a person. Are there triggers that really can send you into a deep dive?
Yeah.
Do you want to reveal one?
Not so much.
I was just going to say, I hope this doesn't turn around to me. And no, I have nothing, to ask myself, nothing. No, not me, but I hope I don't have to answer this question. That's why I'm asking.
No, there's things on there that really, many things that just get
need
me
a, minute.
A little bit angry in a sense of, why is this person getting so popular?
Okay.
I'm looking at this as the stuff is not good.
Okay.
But
this is getting
it
to
plays
the
into the algorithms.
Yes.
In the computer world. So some little sketch that really means nothing all of a sudden has 10,000 followers. It's the algorithms of that that does it. It isn't the work that's so cool. Mm-hmm. It's that work pops up for everybody and then it goes to more. You know, algorithms are very important. If you put your work up there, if your algorithms aren't going with you, people aren't going to see it. You have to understand social media. I think that if you don't understand social media, you're putting yourself a roadblock and you're getting more shows. Not everybody is into this to get a show anyway.
True.
I mean, there's artists that just want to paint.
Yes.
And
yes,
give them gifts or put them in their house or enter your local show.
Yep.
You know, we're not talking to people that are, you know, really out there, going through galleries and doing this thing, want to get a solo show, but we're not ignoring them either. Talking to all artists. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I came to a point where I couldn't frame my stuff anymore, or I should say where you couldn't frame my stuff anymore, you know, I would still make art.
Oh, yeah. And I'm thinking of the artists that created art and it's discovered like 100 years later.
That's not going to do me any good.
No, it's not going to do you any good. But that's the artist that's out there creating the art and kind of keeping it sequestered away from folks. And then all of a sudden it's discovered. I don't know if that's happening as much today, where somebody would deliberately keep their work away from marketing or publicity.
Handful of cases like that. Something, I don't think they planned for it. They just, we had a show, and I'm sorry, I don't remember this gentleman's name. And when I was curator at Midland Center for the Arts, we found his work somewhere, and he had a whole studio of these kinds of works. They were watercolors, and they were amazing. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't tried to show for 30 years. Mm-hmm. We had a solo show of his work. So we came upon him accidentally. So it just took away from his art to try to get in the show and all this kind of stuff. And they're selling. I mean, how much do you depend on the sales of your artwork?
Right.
If you do, then you've got to do all these jump through hoops with social media and put your stuff on Pinterest and put yourself on.
That's why I feel so lucky that I've always had teaching art. I've had that to go on, curating to go on. Basically museum management and arts center management. I'm not even going to call it a backup plan because it's a lifestyle. So that my creating of art and this basically selling of art is icing on the cake, really.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Feel that way? When you sell something, it's icing on the cake.
I was a professional portrait artist out of Portrait Chicago for 3 years. It was the most miserable time in my life. And I thought, this is going to take my will to do art. So there has to be a lot more to making art than selling for me. Mm-hmm. So I've always had a job within the arts where it didn't have to depend on that. But, you retire, your income goes down and you work more.
Right.
So selling is becoming more important. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to change what I do.
Right, right. Well, this has been an interesting discussion.
Yes, it has. A lot of fun.
I do believe there's healthy ways for comparison and definitely unhealthy ways. So a kind of...
Yeah, don't ever look at this stuff and say, I'll never be able to.
Right, right. Don't let it get you down.
You might not be, but you're able to do something that you can do.
Yes.
I certainly can't do everything that's out there.
Right. And just be aware that you are you. Unique. Every mark you make will never be made by anybody else.
Don't fall into this thing that I don't have the talent for.
Right.
That's one of the worst thing you can think of, because talent, I don't know if I believe in talent per se, but I believe in the interest when you're young and you start doing something, somebody says something nice about it, and that lights a fuse and say, I had a teacher call me. My second grade teacher called me about a year ago, and she says to me, she says, she of course was an older lady now, but that was the first class she taught. She'd been following my art all these years and she wanted to say hi. And
amazing.
She said to me, she says, your art is just amazing, but have you ever improved your spelling?
I remember that. Okay.
Not much
people. So focus on your strengths, celebrate with other people when you do have your wins, and think about comparison in the positive way, influences and inspiration. Go that direction, I feel. Okay.
Thank you all for coming to our podcast this week, and check the other ones. There's a lot of good podcasts. This is, I think, number 56.
Yes.
And a lot of them are interviews. A lot of them are us chatting, and check some of those older ones out.
Check them out. Spread the word. Write a review on Apple Podcasts. That is huge when you do that.
Yeah.
As far as algorithms go. And we're enjoying it. We love doing this. So. Yeah. Have a great couple of weeks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to our sponsor, Golden Apple Studio and Residency. The residencies provide dedicated time and space in which visual artists and writers may pursue their work in a beautiful setting located about an hour north of Bar Harbor, Maine, on the remote and rugged shore of Ripley Cove. Shelley and Greg Stevens' commitment to inviting artists to flourish at their amazing property is well known by the many artists who have attended the residencies for over 14 years. I encourage you to consider gifting yourself with your time to flourish by learning more at goldenapplestudio.com. Email director and working artist Shelley Stevens with your questions and scheduling inquiries at snstevens@goldenapplestudio.com. That's snstevens@goldenapplestudio.com. Thank you for listening. You can find our past and future episodes at anchor.fm, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Be sure to follow us on our Facebook page, Art Ladders, The Creative Climb with Valerie Allen and Armin Mersman. Special thanks to our producer, Taylor Kramer of Cold Shower Media.
And check out our websites, valerieallenart.com, arminmersman.com. Stay creative, stay curious, and we'll see you next time.